Well, welcome along to today's programme with me, Justin Briley. Unbelievable, from now until 4 o'clock, it's the programme that gets Christians and non-Christians talking. I'll be introducing my guests and our subject for today in just a moment's time. Don't forget, though, that you can find us online, and many people listen back to past programmes via the podcast, premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Also links there to the Unbelievable Conference 2012, happening in just 2 weeks' time. I do urge you, if you haven't already booked yourself in, to get along to what promises to be a fantastic day of teaching. We've got some great guests coming along for that. Krish Kandai is going to be there. We're going to hear from John Lennox, Michael Green, Bonnie Yule Kuhn, and guests from the US, Hugh Ross and Ken Samples of Reasons to Believe, who are our conference partners for the conference this year. And it's going to be on evangelism and evidence for the Christian faith, and a whole variety of seminars that you can choose from during the day. A little bit more on that later on in the programme. If you want to book yourself in, this is the place to go, premier.org.uk/reasons. Again, that's premier.org.uk/reasons. Right now, time to get into today's programme.
You're unbelievable.
Well, today on the programme, we're asking, where will antagonistic atheism get us? And my guests today are David Robertson, no stranger to Unbelievable, and another guest, Mike Lee, also known as the religious antagonist. We're going to be finding out a little bit about what he does and the methodology he adopts in doing it. But let me introduce, first of all, my special guest, because it is special to have you back here in the studio with me, David, for what seems like the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming back. Many listeners, regular listeners, will know that you've contributed many times in the past as a Christian apologist, coming in, doing various debates or sometimes phone debates with a variety of atheists on the line. But you've had a really eventful 6 to 8 months, haven't you? You nearly died, basically.
Yeah, and then some. I mean, I collapsed after a wedding in October in a pool of blood, which is quite
dramatic.
Melodramatic.
You like to do things, you know, yeah. Not by halves.
And then ended up in ICU in Nine Wells Hospital in Dundee, and I was there for 7 weeks, and then in a high dependency unit, and then the general ward. Cut a long story short, they didn't really expect me to live. So much so that my surgeon and the staff actually started referring to me as Lazarus when I started getting better, which I thought showed an encouraging sign of biblical literacy amongst the general British population.
Well, in Scotland at least.
Yeah, but it was my surgeon basically said he thought it was just miraculous.
Mm.
And I've been slowly recovering since then. According to them, it's rapidly, but for me, it's slowly.
Okay.
My voice was ripped to shreds because I had a tube down my throat for 6 weeks. And we're down in London, obviously, to come to you and also to basically celebrate with my wife the fact that I'm still alive. So what better way than to come and discuss with the religious antagonist?
Yes, and you've recently turned 50, so yeah. I'm sure your wife probably wasn't thinking you'd see that anniversary. But great to have you with us, and I know that many people who listen to this show were praying for you as well and thinking of you. So it's...
I really probably should say this. Well, I was just thinking about it. I wasn't going to, but I might as well now. When I was in the ICU, I was given a lot of drugs to try and sedate me, and they said it was extremely difficult to sedate me. I was very argumentative, apparently.
I can't imagine that.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Know,
unbelievable. Anyway, I because I couldn't communicate except by writing, I had a notepad and pen, and I wrote all the time. But they did say, and Mike mustn't listen to this, that I was one of the most delusional patients they'd ever had. comes to reading too much Richard Dawkins. But at one point, and my wife showed me this, she kept all the notebooks. I wrote to her, "You must get Justin Bieber. Please contact Justin Bieber," which the staff still laugh about. But we kind of figured it was you, Justin Brearley, Justin Bieber, you know, you look alike.
Somewhere, yes, your brain had managed to merge me with the famous American pop idol. Well, well, thank you. I don't quite know how to respond to that. But it is wonderful to have you in, and really, really pleased to see you here. You just for those who aren't familiar with who you are, you're a pastor up in Scotland, St. Peter's Church in Dundee. Yeah. And but you kind of got an itinerant ministry, sort of traveling, speaking, debating occasionally. Yeah. Indeed, you were debating recently at Gunnersbury Baptist Church yeah. on the issue of gay marriage. So if you want to listen back to that, we've made it available on the website and through the podcast. So do get hold of a copy of that to hear David in action recently. But you've really had really the main sort of ministry has been to those who are sceptical. You wrote the book, The Dawkins Letters, and he's been sort of an on and off nemesis of yours in many ways.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just about finished writing a response to Christopher Hitchens' God Is Not Great. And I'm doing something on Sam Harris as well. So I guess I guess I'm very interested in the new atheism, and I'll be really interested to hear what Mike's got to say, because one particular aspect of it, the what I would perceive to be the antagonism, which I was actually genuinely quite surprised at. Of course, Mr. Dawkins would, I think some of his fans would describe me as the Christian antagonist. in fact, one point, Richard Dawkins described me as very unchristian, to which my response was, I thought that was the point. So it was an interesting use.
Well, let's introduce Mike, who's on the line from the States. Mike, thank you for joining me today.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me on, Justin.
Great to have you, Mike. You're from Boise in Idaho. Am I pronouncing that correctly, though?
Boise, Idaho. Correct.
Boise, Idaho. And what's it like out in Boise, Idaho, Mike?
Well, it's pretty nice. We've got a lot of Mormons out here. If you're asking religiously what the horizon looks like and what the environment is. But you know, it's a very conservative state. I believe it's the second most conservative state in the United States. So that's where I was raised. That's where I currently work out of and where I film my videos.
So were you raised in a religious background, or did you kind of adopt atheism at some point?
No, I was raised Christian. I was raised fundamentalist, you know, evangelical.
And what caused you to start questioning your upbringing?
You know, I really don't have a good deconversion story. I was always rather skeptical when it came to religion and faith. And, you know, just from being a child growing up and going to church and seeing a lot of hypocrisy around me, both in my parents and in the various churches that we attended. So it really wasn't until I got a little older, you know, late 20s, mid 20s, that I really started to doubt, read a little bit. I know we've already mentioned Dawkins and Hitchens, and those are certainly the faces of new atheism, as it tends to be called. And they were, you know, they kind of helped pave the way. And I just educated myself a little bit more about what apologetics taught, you know, what the Christian perspective was. And I didn't really see a lot of answers in any of that. And I felt like the most rational decision was to continue doubting religion and to do more than just doubt, speak up and get involved.
Well, I mean, the speaking up is certainly what you do. You do it in quite a unique way. Well, perhaps not that unique, actually, these days, but certainly you've definitely gone for a particular way of doing it. And your sort of acronym, or your pseudonym, I should say, the religious antagonist, sort of says it all, because you produce a lot of videos. They're quite well produced videos, many of them, but they're certainly aimed at kind of teasing, if not outright insulting, people of faith, particularly Christians. You get a lot of hits on YouTube. You've got a lot of people following you on the Facebook page, etc. So what made you decide to particularly go down this route of being an antagonist towards religious people?
Well, antagonist, I mean, let's just be clear on the definition. Webster's dictionary calls it actively expressing opposition or hostility. And that to me exemplifies what new atheism is, and you know what we're calling this new face and this new turn of events. You know, there's a lot of people that are part of this movement that aren't necessarily educated in the same way that a Carl Sagan is, or that a Richard Dawkins is, or you know, not necessarily scientific. You know, these are people that are emotionally driven, you know, and that have lived through some of these experiences themselves and seen things, and giving those people a voice, not necessarily the super scientific or academic. I mean, I am just a regular guy doing doing and saying things that a lot of atheists would like to say and do.
I mean, but is it your intention then to wind up? I don't know if that's an American, that makes sense in America, but we have this phrase, you to wind up someone is to kind of, you know, just to prod them and antagonize them. And I mean, is that a fruitful way of expressing yourself?
I think it is. I think that antagonistic atheism leads to a more balanced conversation at the end. I think that when you're a minority, like you are in America, I know that talking loudly is a way to draw attention and to bring people from out of the closet, people that are scared or people that are skeptical themselves and that are concerned about being outed, you know, through their job, through their family. So yeah, being loud, being aggressive, I think that that draws attention to the issue and gets people talking.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mike, for being with us today. And we're going to be talking today on the issue of whether the antagonism of certain atheists is getting us anywhere. Where will it get us, we're asking. And I wonder what your experiences are, whether you're an atheist, Christian, or somewhere in between. Be interested to hear from you today on perhaps you've interacted on the internet, on forums with people who have quite an antagonistic take on it. Perhaps you are an antagonist yourself and you could tell us why you do it that way. Do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And I'll be happy to read out some of your responses next week on the show. And you can also call in 08456 52 52 52. Leave a voicemail for Unbelievable. Again, I'll try to play that out on next week's show. Don't forget, we're available on the Facebook and the Twitter accounts at UnbelievableJB in both cases. Is what you need to be looking for. And all those links and ways to get in touch, past programmes and much more available from the website, premier.org.uk/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, gents, let's go into sort of discussing this now. You've had a look at some of Mike's videos on YouTube, David. What have you made of them?
Well, I think they're well produced. They certainly are antagonistic. And my concern, Mike, and I would want to ask you this about, is why? Because if I was to respond in that kind of antagonistic way, does it not just create division? And you're talking about words, but ultimately words lead to actions. For example, Christians are very much a minority in this country. Are you suggesting that in order to have a balanced discussion, we should be loud and shout and go out and demonstrate on the streets and provoke secularists or Muslims or whatever? I mean, I don't understand the point of the antagonism.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can't certainly speak to what's going on in the European countries right now. I mean, I don't live there. I don't work there. I don't film there. I know that there's certainly some interesting things going on with Islam, and it's spread through some countries, and I don't follow it as much as I should. So I'm certainly not educated as well as I could to have a dialogue about that. Regarding America, though, antagonism is a response. It is an answer. Being aggressive is an answer in America. We talk loud. We carry a big stick. And depending on which video of mine you're discussing, you know, there's a lot of different forms and different levels of antagonism. If we're talking about going after somebody who deserves it, who's putting themselves in the public limelight, a protester, a street preacher, I am simply answering them and taking it to the next logical conclusion. If somebody's out on the street preaching about religion, I have the right to go out and preach about atheism to them.
You can preach about atheism, but I think it's the antagonism side of it. For example, I don't think, whatever one's views on human sexuality, I don't think that as a Christian I should go out and be homophobic or whatever, because mm-hmm. I know that what will happen is in schools and elsewhere that people will end up being beaten up for it. Now, if you're antagonistic in terms of religion, I mean, it's pretty tough when you go to school and you're known as the Bible basher. And that's mm-hmm. that was something I experienced even 20 years ago. In the culture we're in just now, if I write something in a newspaper, in fact, I was on the BBC. Sorry, Justin, for mentioning.
I'll forgive you, David.
and there was one of the producers said, "How do you do this?" Because as soon as I started speaking, emails started coming in from people who basically wanted me crucified. You know, it was quite extraordinary. And the level of antagonism. mean, what I find intriguing is you kind of took my breath away when you said that you were aiming really for those who are not educated and those who are emotionally driven, which has always been my argument about the new atheism. And the new atheists I know keep denying that, but you've just handed that to me on a plate. I mean, thank you for that. But I know that that works. You may say it works within America. I think personally it's very, very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you just mentioned something that's interesting as well about homophobia and and allowing homosexuals equal rights. In America, they don't have those things. In America, we live in a country where the religious fundamental right, they hold political power. Decisions are being made every day.
Is Barack
that,
Obama is religious fundamentalist?
No,
he's the president.
But he doesn't have control over specific states outlawing gay marriage or banning gay marriage. I mean, Chris Christie in New Jersey, I don't know if you follow that specifically, just recently, a few months ago, vetoed a bill that would have allowed gay marriage. This is something that we consistently come against here in America. And the only response, the only rational response, and this makes rational sense through a Christian's mind, is the Bible says that it's a sin. And that just does not apply in 2012. I mean, we're progressive human beings, and there's no reason why we should be judging people due to their sexuality in a free country, in a free democracy like we live in. And you guys live in as well.
Yeah, but I'm not going to head down, because I've already done a couple of debates on that. I'm not going to head down the route of let's discuss gay rights and so on. But what I'm discussing is this issue of religious antagonism, because, you know, you say we live in a democracy, and you say that the only way to get these things is to be antagonistic. I don't think that's what you do in a democracy. I think that's how you behave in a dictatorship.
I'll be interested in a way to move it into a sort of discussion of some of the things you do actually do.
Yeah.
You know, there's some interesting examples. One that stuck in my memory, Mike, was a video of you moving Bibles in a library from the section they were in to the fiction section, and sort of videoing you doing this and asking people to help you and this sort of thing. I mean, it's kind of lighthearted and silly, but I mean, what's the point of that kind of a video for you?
Well, I think that obviously the point is that I'm stating that the Bible is fiction. I mean, that's clearly the overall point. But a video like that is more lighthearted. It's supposed to be hooliganism. I mean, it's making a joke. I mean, the libraries are public property. Taxes pay for them. I'm going in and I'm doing a stupid stunt just to prove a point that the Bible's fiction. I mean, that in and of itself, I mean, I would find it hard to believe that a lot of people would have a problem with that video specifically.
What do you make of that kind of a video, David?
Well, would you have a problem if I went into a library and made a video removing Richard Dawkins to the fiction section?
No, not at all. I mean, I would find it humorous as long as it was done with some flair and good production value.
Yeah, and what do you think the librarian would think?
Well, the librarians, I actually went up to them and explained to them how I felt like the Bibles were in the fiction section. So I gave them an opportunity to speak, and they kind of played along, and then the video ended.
Maybe that one's sort of a bit of a silly example in some ways, but there was one example that you wanted to, I think, bring up, David, which was one that struck me as well when I was just browsing through some of these videos. There's a video of Mike approaching a homeless person, and Mike, do you want to sort of describe what happens in this video, and then perhaps David respond?
Sure. Yeah, it's the video is called "God vs. $20," where it's a homeless family. And the father is standing on the side of the road asking for money. He's saying he needs money and God bless. So I approach him and ask him if he would be willing to cross off the word God on his sign in exchange for $20. And a large theological discussion erupts where the family and his wife gets involved, decides that they will not sell out their principles because crossing the word God off is an offense, apparently, to God. And then in the end, we do find some middle ground between cutting the word God out of the sign, tearing up the rest of the sign and handing it to me, and then I give them the $20.
Okay. What did you make of that video, David?
Well, it wasn't so much the video, Mike. It was I saw you being interviewed, or I heard you being interviewed discussing it afterwards, and it was this general sense of mockery of how dumb are these Christians just by refusing to cross out the word God. What a bunch of loony fundamentalists. Did you really mean that?
I think that it's a silly situation that I put them in. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that they're loony. I think that they're certainly ignorant. And the video, I believe, is very important due to the fact that it highlights the death of common sense. And it's very uncomfortable to watch somebody's face take over for common sense on camera. It's appalling to watch these people idolize a piece of paper with three letters on the paper.
So you're saying that the common sense approach would have been to simply accept money for crossing off the word?
The common sense approach would be that when a homeless person that's on the side of the street asking for money tells me they would not accept $1 million in exchange for their sign, I've got to question that person's education level. Once again, not their sanity, because I don't think they're stupid. I just think they're ignorant.
It's funny, again, coming back to the education thing, because you're saying you're trying to appeal to people who are not particularly well educated.
Not educated from an academic standpoint. I mean, we're not talking.
But you're really talking then about social education, which some of us would regard, well, okay, that's in effect brainwashing. But let me leave that aside for a moment and suggest something to you. I mean, is there anything, I don't know if you're married or anything like that, but is there anyone for whom, if I said, look, I'll give you $100 for you to call them a prostitute or something, or to cross them out, to remove them? And would you just accept the money?
There is nothing I wouldn't do as long as it wasn't illegal for $20. No.
Okay. Thank you so much, because you basically summed up. If you want a world in which there is nothing that people wouldn't do for $20, then you want a world that's basically hell. And the fact that you call that common sense shows how far removed you actually are from common sense. That's not common sense. That's prostitution.
Well, I'm not saying that the rest of the world should do that. I'm saying that there's nothing I wouldn't do that isn't illegal for $20, especially if it had something to do with I mean, if you came up and told me, ask Jesus into your heart for $20, burn a Dawkins book, denounce evolution, I would do that for days. Carry a cross around, hang a cross in my front yard, put a Christian bumper sticker on my car. These are all things similar to what I propose.
Okay, well, here's something for you. I'll actually personally send you $20 if you go to a good Christian church for the next 20 years every Sunday.
One $20 bill? Or do I get $20 every time I go?
No, you get $120. You said there's nothing you wouldn't do for $20. So here, that's 20 years. That's $1 a year. I want you there every single Sunday, and I get to name the church as well.
I don't know if I'm allowed in some of the churches around my area right now.
I'm sure you'd be very. I'd find one for you. I mean, basically, your statement doesn't make any sense, and you know that. I mean, it sounds good, and when you're discussing with fellow atheists, and particularly of the type that you're talking about, emotionally driven and so on, who've been through really bad experiences, perhaps, and who see the hypocrisy in the church, yeah, sure, it's a good laugh. But it's as a system of morality, as an example of common sense, it's so off the scale that, you know, you basically shoot yourself in the foot just even by saying that.
If I can jump in here, Mike, I saw the video and heard the discussion as well that David referenced. I just felt the whole thing was a bit crass, really. I didn't feel like you were particularly making a very good point. I just felt like you were kind of antagonizing some people who you kind of... It felt a bit nasty, really, if I'm honest. That was my reaction to it. And I didn't think personally that someone watching that is going to think, yay for atheism. Doesn't it make that much more sense than Christianity? Sure, you might see those people as a bit simple, as a bit whatever. But something about what you did for me kind of seemed to undermine their humanity. Respond to that.
Well, I will definitely give you the fact that it's an uncomfortable watch, and I don't. I may have appeared smug in the video, and I've actually heard that a couple times. Although that was certainly not my intention to come across that way. I see the video as a very important look into somebody who values these pipe dreams of their religion and puts these idols beyond the well-being of their own family. And that's what I see in the video. And that's what a lot of people have seen. And what you're saying is, as far as making it just be strictly for entertainment, most of what I do is strictly entertainment. It's supposed to be for laughs. I don't see that video as being particularly funny. I see it as being more more educational, really, than anything else. But I think we're getting besides the fact here. I mean, however I appeared in the video, whatever I did, and yeah, sure, I admit in the video I'm being a dick from the beginning. I mean, it's certainly not the best position to put anybody into. Nobody wants to be homeless, and I'm not exploiting them or laughing at them for being homeless. That's not the point. I never asked this family to denounce their beliefs. I'm not asking them to give up God. I'm not asking them to sell out in any way. What I'm doing is I'm asking them to cross something off in exchange for what they're asking for. And that is the point of the video. And if either of you, I know that one of you at least was married, would you guys, if you were in the same position, would you tell me no? Would you accept $20?
No, I would absolutely say no. And if you offered me $1 million, I would say no. I could do with $1 million right now. But no, I would say no. And I'll tell you why. It's because there are things that are more valuable in life than money. And what I find, I don't want to accuse you of being American or anything like that, you know. But in terms of you speak disparagingly of right wing fundamentalism. But this view that the dollar is all that matters is I find astonishing, or only things that money can buy. No, there's a certain dignity and self respect and view of being human, and for me, love for Jesus Christ. Now that's what drove the early Christians, when they were told, look, why don't you just acknowledge Caesar as well? And they said, no, there's only one Lord Jesus, or you're going to burn at the stake. Now, to you, that's an example of complete lunacy. To me, that's an example of loyalty to Jesus Christ and something that makes us different as human beings from just mere animals who just go along with our instincts. The route that you're telling us to go is one that ultimately leads only with the wealthy and the powerful controlling and having any say in things. It's like, it's part of the crassness of modern society. And I think crass is a good word to use of it.
We're going to have to take a quick break, guys. We'll be back with more discussion on this. We're talking religious antagonism today, and we're talking to the religious antagonist, Mike Lee. He's well known on YouTube, a lot of hits on his videos where he regularly takes the mickey. Again, I'm not sure if that translates to an American, but out of religious people, especially Christians. He's in conversation on today's show with David Robertson, who is a Christian pastor from Dundee. We'll be back in just a moment's time with more discussion here on the show that aims to get your thinking unbelievable.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley. And don't forget, just a couple of weeks away now, it's Unbelievable, the Conference 2012. And I do hope that if you're listening, you've signed up and you're actually actively asking your friends along too. It's going to be a great day, Saturday the 26th of May in central London, well, Clapham Junction area actually, so great transport links from much of the country to there. And we're going to be joined by several great speakers, including our guests from across the pond, from Reasons to Believe, Hugh Ross and Ken Samples. They're going to be speaking on the evidence for Christianity, how to respond to the claims of skeptics. We're going to be hearing also from great names such as John Lennox, Michael Green, Krishkan Dyer, Bonnie Yulquoon will be there as well. So it's going to be a great day of putting evidence and evangelism together. If you want to sign up, you want to get booked in, premier.org.uk/reasons. Again, that's premier.org.uk/reasons for Unbelievable, the Conference 2012, Saturday the 26th of May. Looking forward to meeting many, many listeners there and many new faces as well. So that's the place to go, premier.org.uk/reasons. And don't forget, if you want to get in touch about today's programme, I do encourage you to email in your responses, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And we've been talking about, what about antagonistic atheism? We've got on the line with us Mike Lee, who terms himself the religious antagonist. He makes videos that disparage, mock, ridicule Christianity. David Robertson is in the studio with me today. David is well known as a Christian apologist who regularly interacts with some of the more vociferous atheists, both online and in person. He's used to giving as good as he gets very often. So I thought this was a good match, but getting Mike with you, David. You've said in the past on this program and in other forums that you believe that a lot of this new atheism is emotionally driven, as much as very often some of the spokespersons like to say it's all about intellectual, you know, rigorousness. Yeah. You believe there's actually hiding something.
Well, I'm not so sure I would even say hiding. I would say there are emotional reasons, and it was interesting to hear Mike agree with that. Maybe I could ask you a question in terms of something you said earlier about, you know, growing up in a Christian fundamentalist home, and without knowing the background of that, you said you saw a lot of hypocrisy in the churches and others. Now, I understand that. I see that. Haven't you seen any hypocrisy in atheists?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't believe that atheists are superior in any way to Christians. I just believe that they've made a more educated decision.
So if you rejected Christianity because of the hypocrisy you saw, why have you not rejected atheism because of the hypocrisy you see?
Well, you're trying to compare religion to a philosophy, so to speak. Atheism is a way of life. Religion is something that controls people that I would say that are weak, something that people that they need somebody to tell them what they can and can't do. There's no structure to atheism. There is no pope of atheism. There's no king. There's no hierarchy. Richard Dawkins is not in charge of atheism. There's a lot of atheists that disagree with his methods and think that he's too antagonistic as well. A lot of atheists don't appreciate what I do. You're comparing two things that you can't compare.
Well, actually, I can compare because you just said to me that atheism is a way of life. And when I go on atheist websites, they keep telling me atheism is not a way of life. Atheism is just a lack of belief in God.
Well, that's the beauty of atheism, is that it can encompass a lot of different perspectives. Christianity can't.
Atheism can mean anything then.
To some people, it means certain things. Some people are anti-theist. Some people are more agnostic. With an atheist slant, it just depends on who you talk to specifically.
Yeah, because what I find...
Atheism is not a religion. Christianity is.
Actually, you just said atheism is a philosophy, and I would say Christianity is a philosophy as well. What I'm interested in is, though, are you opposed to all religions? Are you antagonistic to all religions?
I'm antagonistic towards religions that have a powerful force in America and that I see involving everyday life, ones that have powerful lobby groups in the United States. I would like to some point branch out into other religions. I know that Islam is something that's very controversial at the time. But the problem, and although this is a good problem to have in America, is that Muslims don't have any power. They don't have any power over here. They have no swing.
But you see, what I'm getting confused about here is, if you're opposed to groups that have power, then you would be opposed to Jewish groups and to Christian groups and to Mormon groups. Would you be opposed to rich companies who have power? Would you be opposed to the gay lobby? Would you be opposed to other groups that have power?
I'm opposed to any group that uses their power to denounce human rights. Absolutely, yes.
And who decides what human rights are?
Groups
that have power.
I would use the words of Jesus and say, people that that believe, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. People that do not follow the golden rule. People that judge other people and call them unequal, do not allow them the same civil liberties as other people.
But you see, you're getting into a huge mess here, because you're saying, you know, the words of Jesus. I'm glad that you think that Jesus existed and that he said these words. That's us making some progress. But you talk about power and human rights. Who determines what human rights are? Who determines what equal rights are? And the way that you would do... unto others. I mean, you're the religious antagonist. You mock those who believe. Would you want people to mock you?
Absolutely.
In the things that are most valued, you're quite happy for people just to mock you and to hurt you and to wound you?
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson spoke very highly of ridicule and said that it was the best weapon against preposterous ideas. I have a lot of respect for that concept, and that you have to be able to laugh at things. It's satire. It's the tearing down of things.
That's interesting, because if someone then was satirical, let's say, about Jewish people, as you found in Weimar Germany, the Nazis, they used humor and ridicule a great deal. I mean, I'm sorry to bring the Nazis into this. You know, you always lose every time you say...
I was waiting for it.
But, I mean, they did. I mean, if someone started using ridicule to mock African Americans, would you say that was okay?
No, I wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. So it's okay to use ridicule to mock Christians, but it's not okay to use ridicule to mock other groups.
Well, no, I would say that ridicule is okay for groups of people that decide to think a certain ideology. Black people don't decide to be black. Jews don't decide to be Jewish. They're born Jewish. There's a difference there. Gay people don't decide to be gay. And although you may disagree with that, there's a lot of research that would say otherwise. So I ridicule people that put down other people and use a 2,000-year-old book to do it.
And what's wrong with it? You've just quoted from that 2,000-year-old book as the standard for your civil rights. Do unto others as you'd have them do to you.
I'm just using that as a quote. I don't live by the golden rule, but I think it's a good idea. Bill Maher said it best that there's nothing necessarily wrong with Jesus or Christians. He just wishes that Christians would be more like Jesus. And I can agree with that.
Yeah, that's true. I wish Christians could be more like Jesus, too. I wish I could be more like Jesus. But, I mean, I find it interesting that Bill Maher would say that, and this is a Jesus who spoke of hell. It was a Jesus who went to a cross to die for our sins. It was a Jesus who gave some very, very radical teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. And you know, I find people saying, I like that Jesus, but they don't really know that Jesus.
Well, I'm glad that you're willing to own the fact that Jesus wasn't just some hippie sitting around smoking weed. He wasn't a John Lennon playing an acoustic guitar. Although I would also question the historical Jesus, and I would question whether or not some of the more apocalyptic preachings that came out of Jesus's mouth, I would question whether they really did come from Jesus, because there appears to be a different Jesus in the New Testament operating and preaching in different parables. So once again, I wasn't there. You weren't there. If he did, in fact, quote the golden rule, which existed before him, if that's something that he believed was the most important rule to live by, I can support that.
Yeah, you see, again, I find all of that incredibly interesting, because you say you weren't there and I wasn't there. Well, I wasn't around when Adolf Hitler was around. I wasn't around when Julius Caesar was around. I mean, I can't base the whole of my life upon what I personally experience. I can't reduce the universe to what, you know, you talk about atheism as being a way of life, and Your strikes me. It seems to me as though you've come out of one very narrow fundamentalism into another very narrow fundamentalism. Then reacting against sort of Mormon Boise, Idaho, you've turned up with this American version of fundamentalist atheism, which is based entirely upon what you personally feel. And I just think that's an appalling way to run society.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that feel the same way that I do, and I don't propose to have all the answers. That's what atheism is it's a search for answers. We don't propose to say we know why we're all here. We don't know how we all got here. I think that being atheist is being open to different ideas. And I would agree with you that there's a lot of atheists that are very religious in the way that they see things, but that doesn't mean that they're religious.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because I think Richard Dawkins, most recently in that Reason Rally, encouraged the people there to mock religion, to ridicule religion, whenever they come across something that they disagree with. Not just to question and have a discussion, but to actually make fun of it. And I think this is probably where the problem comes in, is that, in all honesty, I think it's a very self-defeating thing to do. If you're trying to persuade someone that they're wrong, okay, which you've got every right to do, Mike, making fun of them is probably only going to drive them deeper into what you believe is their obviously superstitious thinking, because you're attacking the person rather than the issue, aren't you? And I just think it's a totally counterproductive way of doing things. I mean, I suppose I shouldn't be giving you advice on how to try to de-evangelize people, but isn't it just inevitably people will feel like they're under attack and they're not going to listen to you?
Well, and to an extent, I would say that you're right on one hand. On the other hand, not all ideas are created equal. And when we live in America, we have the freedom of speech. We can say things. We can do things. What this is an answer to the religious majority that is in the United States. Once again, atheists, I believe 16% are represented in the United States. The rest, or most of them, are Christian of nature. We're a minority. We have to be vocal. Every movement needs its people that are more passive. Some people are more aggressive. I like to use the example in the civil rights movement of a Martin Luther King Jr., of a Malcolm X. Every movement needs somebody who's more boisterous, somebody who's not afraid to get dirty, somebody who's going to be a little more in your face.
Would you ridicule Martin Luther King for his religious beliefs, which of course were the foundation for his beliefs in the equality of all people?
I wouldn't agree with his religious beliefs, but I agree with his views on equality.
Those views of inequality came from his religious beliefs. I mean, you're in enormous danger of throwing out the baby with the bathwater just because you've had bad experience of some religious... And this is where I find so much of this atheist antagonism. I mean, would you accept that the creed of the new atheist is there is no God and I hate him?
We keep going back to this concept of the new atheist movement being emotional. And I don't think that that's bad. And I'm not afraid to own that because I don't think there's a bad reason to be an atheist. If you're emotional, that's fine. If you're not educated in the same way that Dawkins is, if you didn't go to a higher college and education, you don't need those things to be an atheist. The thing that I believe made Hitchens so popular is that he spoke to the average person. What he said was very accessible. His words, his books were easy to read, very easy to understand. You don't have to be a biology professor at Oxford to understand that. I'm willing to own that. I don't think that there's a bad reason to be an atheist.
Well, actually, I think emotion is a very bad reason to be an atheist because it's not a reason.
It's a response.
Yeah, it's a response. It's entirely emotional. I mean, it's as you admit, and I'm very thankful for you admitting it. I'm also intrigued that you say that atheists would say we don't know how we got here. I suspect Mr. Dawkins and Mr. Hitchens and Mr. Harris would all say we know exactly how we got here.
Well, I think that we have an idea of how we got here. I don't know if we can say for sure that we know how we got. Once again, I'm not a scientist. I can't say for sure. From what I've read, I don't think it's conclusive. But I do know, however, I do know that if tomorrow we were to find out that your God does exist and that Jesus came back to life after 3 days of being crucified, rational atheists would convert to Christianity. However, tomorrow, if we were to find out without a doubt that the earth was created through a big bang, you would still hold on to your belief.
First,
that's the difference.
Actually, my belief is that the earth was created through a bang. I think when God spoke, it probably wasn't a whimper. So I have no difficulty with that. My problem, though, is you. That's an extraordinary statement you've just made, that you do know that if atheists saw that Jesus had risen from the dead, that they would, or whatever, that they would immediately convert. Not at all. I think because it's not reasonable. The atheist position, as you've largely admitted, isn't reasonable. It's something that's emotional. And I think presented with all different kinds of facts, people make judgments based upon their personal experience.
I mean, wasn't it Christopher Hitchens, Mike, who said even if he did meet God face to face, he'd sort of spit on him and say, I don't want nothing to do with you, because he views God as a sort of North Korean dictator type thing. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? And I feel like many people, if they came face to face with God, would want nothing to do with God because God represents authority, and they don't want authority in their lives. They don't want to be in the presence of the cosmic creator. I mean, it just strikes me often when people say, well, obviously, if it turns out God is true, then I'd say yes to heaven. Actually, saying yes to God, saying yes to heaven, means saying yes to an awful lot of things that you might not want to say yes to. You might prefer, actually, to be out of the presence of God entirely.
Well, I'm not sure, going back to what you said about Hitchens, if God does exist, I doubt he's really worth worshiping, because I highly doubt that he's a good God. And in my opinion, he would be the biggest jerk in the universe, based on more than just these issues of evil in the world, of bad things happening to good people. He's guilty of a lot more than that, but that's not where I want to go with this. Where I want to go with this is the concept of heaven and hell. I would say that most atheists wouldn't have a problem with believing in heaven and hell. I can speak for myself, and I say that I would love to believe in the idea of heaven, that we can live for eternity, and I can drink with my friends, and I can hang out with everybody that I like and my family, and enjoy heaven. And I know that the bad people on earth, the people that did evil things, will pay the consequences in hell for eternity. That's a great thought. That's a great idea.
What if the bad people end up in heaven because they've said yes to Jesus? I mean, could you cope with that? Is that something?
If what?
If it turns out that there were bad people. People who had done terrible things, but they'd asked for forgiveness from God, and they ended up in heaven. I mean,
That's one of the things that God would have to answer to. I mean, I have a hard time believing that serial murderers in America, Ted Bundy, Ed Gein, these type of people that became Christians before they were executed, lived their entire lives dedicated to harming people and eating people alive. can convert to Christianity before they're executed and can spend the rest of eternity in heaven, whereas Christopher Hitchens dies a deathbed atheist and he's spending eternity in hell. Where is the concept of that? Where is the concept of justice there?
Mike, you're just digging yourself in enormous holes because concepts of justice and goodness, surely those are just social constructs that have come out of our evolution. They don't mean anything from your position.
From my position?
Yeah. Do you think there's absolute justice, absolute goodness, absolute right, absolute wrong?
I think that we're intelligent enough to be able to define those things.
Yeah, but do you think they exist?
Yes, I do.
I think there's an absolute right, an absolute good, an absolute wrong, an absolute justice, and so on.
I don't know if I would say it's absolute, but I do believe in justice and right and wrong.
Well, if it's not absolute, how can it be justice? How can it be right? How can it be wrong? If it's changeable according to the whims of any particular society or whoever's in power, then...
Well, I think that there's basic things that are right. I think there's basic things that are wrong. I mean, your Bible saying that you should stone children if they're disobedient, I would say that's wrong. Your Bible saying that we should kill your neighbor if he works on Sunday, I think that's wrong. Those are bad things.
Strangely enough, I also think it's wrong to misrepresent the Bible because it doesn't say that.
It doesn't?
No, it doesn't. And this is what always happens. But, I mean, it's still coming back to this. Actually, the only way you can judge the Bible in terms of right and wrong is if you accept that there is a right and wrong. And as Richard Dawkins points out, without religion, it's almost impossible to have an absolute right and wrong. In fact, he says the universe has all the properties we would expect if there were no right and wrong. So what you're actually doing is, to me, your position is an incredibly faith-based position, but the faith is in your own judgment and your own abilities and your own culture and your own society. And from that, you feel free not only to judge everyone else in the world, but also to judge God. And that's an extraordinary arrogance.
Okay. That's fair.
I mean, that's the problem that we end up with. Because, I mean, let me sympathize with you a little bit. I would want to describe myself as a religious antagonist as well, in that... And, you know, in our kind of sort of touchy-feely world, we're all supposed to say, and this is where the emotional bit comes in as well, we're all supposed to say, oh, well, they're people of faith, so that's all fine. Well, no, it's not all fine. You know, I happen to think Mormon belief is ludicrous. I really do. I mean, I would sooner be an atheist than be a Mormon.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I find that if a religion was to tell me it was okay to beat up my wife and so on, no, I'm sorry. Don't just say that because it's religious, it's fine. I mean, Jim Jones and so on, drink the Kool-Aid, that's all religious. I mean, it's absolutely appalling. So I think you'll find in the Bible that both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, the sin that is most attacked is false religion and idolatry. So in that sense, you could describe Jesus as a religious antagonist. But... just because there's false religion and wrong religion doesn't mean that all religion is wrong. Just because there's bad sex doesn't mean that all sex is wrong. Just because there's a misuse of money doesn't mean that all money should be banned. And I think it's the same with religion. I mean, I think basically you've had a bad experience of religion, like many of the new atheists. You're very antagonistic towards it. You're very comfortable at one level in your own view of the world. But I think that view just doesn't make sense. And that's where... we're coming back to Jesus Christ, who really did exist. And by the way, I've heard Hitchens and others mock the Bible as being written by a bunch of illiterate desert shepherds, which always amuses me because how illiterate people write is a bit illogical and inconsistent. But I don't think, I mean, I think you're just dismissing the Bible because of the teachings and the misuse of it. And I agree with you about the misuse of Christianity in terms of power and so on. I mean, we have to say that, I mean, I go to the southern U.S. quite a lot, and there's still the remnants of the racism which was defended it was attacked by many Bible-believing Christians, but it was defended by many people who use the Bible as well, and I just think that's a complete misuse. So I understand that, and I appreciate where you're coming from that, but your whole rejection of the whole thing and your ability to put yourself at the center and be able to judge everything is to me quite extraordinary.
Well, let me answer that real quick because I know we're coming up on time. I'm a product of my American culture, and what I'm doing is I'm policing my own culture, my society. I am a product, and I won't pretend like I'm not. I'm not coming across as some kind of world police. That's for the atheists in England to do. That's for Thunderfoot and D.P.R. Jones to get involved in your area. I'm going to take care of my area. I can't speak to Europe. I can't speak to other continents. I'm going to speak to where I know and what I do. Go ahead, sorry.
All right, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, and that's the difference between our position, because my concern is for the world, actually. It's not just my own area and my own life and my own emotions and how I feel. I mean, I've been abused as much by Christians as by non-Christians in terms of language and other things as well. And I've seen Christians do the most horrendous things, inverted commas, even people who are genuine believing Christians. But I have an understanding of that because the Bible says that we are all sinners and we're all... I can't take this view that you seem to take of the world, which is what I call the George W. Bush view, that there's the good guys and the bad guys, or the John Wayne view. And naturally, of course, we consider ourselves to be the good guys. I just think we're all screwed up. And that's where you need Christianity.
I'm not saying, you know, compare me to George Bush saying there's good guys and bad guys. I'm not saying that all religion is bad. I'm just saying that religion that spreads intolerance is bad. Unfortunately, your religion is the main offender in that. No, Christianity is the biggest offender of intolerance.
But again, you see, what you're doing is you're using words in a way. You're using a word like tolerance and intolerance without any meaning.
Do you believe that I'm going to hell if I don't accept Jesus?
No, I tell you what I believe. I believe you'll be going to hell on the basis of how you react to God. And any guy who can sit there and say, hey, I've got the right to judge God and I'm going to say God's done well, you are choosing to be without God, and that's what hell is. You don't realize that. You don't realize
that, yes?
Yes, of course.
Well, that's intolerant.
No, it's not.
You're judging me.
No, excuse me. You obviously think I'm wrong, don't you?
I disagree. Yes.
So you think I'm wrong. So is that not intolerant?
You started it.
honestly, I think... No, absolutely not. It's not intolerant. Look, tolerance is when you let people... It's funny, we live in a society... I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to an anti-hate rally, but they're full of hatred. What I find intriguing is tolerance in a Christian perspective is when you put up with or allow views which are different to yours and don't insist that everyone in the state and elsewhere goes along with your view. So I'm certainly willing to tolerate your viewpoint. But you're telling me that I cannot have a particular viewpoint because without automatically being condemned for intolerance, which is itself intolerant. You're basically saying, by definition, I have to be intolerant unless I agree with you.
I'm saying that you can practice your religion because we have the freedom of religion in America, as long as it doesn't impede on anyone else's or my religion or my views to not have religion in my life. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you can't be Christian. I'm just saying don't be a Christian and make your Christian values affect my life to not be a Christian.
So you see, what I find really intriguing about that is what you're really saying is you can be a Christian as long as you do it behind closed doors, keep it to yourself. Don't let it impact or affect anyone else. But that's not Christianity. Because, for example, I did a debate with Michael Shermer on this program a long time ago, and he admitted that if you took Christianity out of the cities in the United States, then the vast majority of work amongst the poor would disappear. So I would say you are asking us, you're saying to us, you can be a Christian, but don't let it impact upon the culture and the society. And I'd say, sorry, that's not Christianity. So you're really saying you can't be a Christian.
Well, I mean, we're talking semantics at this point.
No, we're talking absolute... No, this is not semantics. This is absolute practical reality. When someone says to me, you can be a Christian, but you can only be a Christian in the way I say, then that is not semantics.
I don't think there's a problem with setting up a secular society, one that values the separation of church and state. I don't see how that's impossible to erect. What? And I don't think most atheists want to outlaw or ban religion or Christianity. They just want them to keep it to themselves.
Exactly. But you see, there's the world of difference. That's a neat trick. There's a world of difference between a secular society, which some Christians would argue for, and a society in which Christianity is privatized.
Well, then let me ask you this. If you believe that Christianity is paramount to the success of a society like American culture and society and government, then why are you surprised at antagonistic atheism, this new face of atheism? If we're doing the same thing that you guys have been doing, why does that shock you?
Well, what I was surprised was I thought atheists were basically rational people whose doubts were primarily intellectual. I actually should have read my Bible, which tells me a bit more that, in actual fact, it's the atheist position is not a rational, intellectual one. It is entirely an emotional and rebellious one against God. And, you know, I rebuke myself for not having believed the Bible or understood it properly. But what I'm not surprised is I do not want to equate Christianity with any one particular culture. I don't think what America needs is more Christianity, if you like. Remember, is it Dinesh D'Souza wrote a response to Christopher Hitchens' God is Not Great, and he entitled it Christianity is Great. That was the wrong answer, because I don't think Christianity is great. I think Jesus is great. I think a lot of that has been done in the name of Christianity is wrong. And the only way we have a Christian society is if we have more Christians, not by having cultural, civic Christianity.
We're going to have to take a quick break, and then we're going to start to wrap things up, gents. Fascinating discussion going on here between David Robertson, our Christian guest here in the studio, and Mike Lee, who's joining us from the States, the religious antagonist. Where will antagonistic atheism get us, we're asking today, and we've ranged over a number of different areas and topics. But join us again in a short moment's time as we conclude today's programme. I'm Justin Brierley, your host through till 4 o'clock this afternoon. We're online as well at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Welcome back to the final part of Unbelievable this Saturday afternoon. And just another reminder that if you haven't already booked in, I do urge you to visit premier.org.uk/reasons, where you can find out about Unbelievable, the conference 2012, happening on Saturday, the 26th of May, just 2 weeks away now. And what a great lineup of speakers and topics we've got there, and loads of opportunities for you to ask questions of the speakers during those seminars, to browse loads of great resources that we'll have there available at the conference. And a little later on in the programme, I'll tell you about some of the other exciting events going on around that time, when Ken Samples and Hugh Ross are with us from Reasons to Believe over from the States. But if you want to get involved in the conference and you want to book yourself in, premier.org.uk/reasons. Let's get back into the final part of today's programme.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So just concluding today's conversation with the religious antagonist, Mike Lee, and my guest in the studio here, Christian David Robertson. And if you want to find out more about either of my guests, do check out the Unbelievable webpage, premier.org.uk/unbelievable, and check the links for both my guests and where you can find out more about their work and what they do. The Solas Center for Public Christianity is the other thing that I should have said earlier David is very much involved in, and worth checking out the resources they have there. Gentlemen, we've been asking where will antagonistic atheism get us. I mean, what it's interesting, because in the last couple of weeks we created a new group on Facebook for the Unbelievable sort of community. We've got a page, but we decided to create a new one, a new group, because that's a little bit easier to get conversations going. Well, as it turns out, for whatever reason, lots of new members joined that. Lots of atheist members have been contributing more. There were atheist Christian discussions, a lot of those going on the page anyway, but suddenly a lot more what you might say antagonistic atheists have been joining in. I'll give you an example of one post that got quite a few responses. It was simply some 4 or 5 words, which simply said what was it, something like irrational Christian is a redundant, something like that. So basically, you know, if you're Christian, you are by definition irrational. So, you know, that kind of thing. And and it strikes me that is the way that some atheists want to play things, is to just be provocative, say things and kind of get a response. And it doesn't always strike me that it's about going in for a fruitful discussion to find out what the other side thinks, if you like. What do you make of it, Mike? Do you think that's a good way to go, that we sort of go in with the sort of guns blazing and just see what happens?
Well, I think it's certainly interesting, and I think that the internet has been one of the most valuable tools that atheists have been able to use to connect all over the world. You know, speaking of antagonism and atheist antagonism and things like that, let me just make a very important point about America, is that America is incredibly anti-intellectual. we celebrate stupidity over here. The only things that we worship over here are money, power, fame. So the concept of a lot of these things, a lot of these people that are lashing out, like we've been talking about earlier, these aren't rational people. A lot of times these are people that have become atheists because they're angry. And once again, we've discussed these things. Although atheism is rational, some of these people are irrational, the same way that Westboro Baptists are irrational Christians. So when you see things posted online, angry comments, I think that that's normal. I think that that's also part of, if they're coming from America, at least part of our anti-intellectual culture.
So there are anti-intellectual atheists as there are anti-intellectual Christians.
There are just as many. In fact, a lot of atheists would say that I am one. And what I do is exploitation and gives other atheists a bad name. Most of the hate mail that I get is from atheists. It's not from Christians.
Well, it was interesting because it was some of the atheist regulars of the old page who were, you know, responding to the what you might say the atheist trolls coming on the new group and sort of saying, no, look, that's not the way we do things here. You know, sure, disagree, but don't attack the person, you know, and all the rest of it. So obviously atheists differ among themselves about the best way to do these things. I mean, you've had a lot of sort of interactions online, haven't you, David? I mean, that was kind of how the Dawkins letters originally came about, through your interactions on the Richard Dawkins forum and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there should be a sign above every computer which basically says, don't feed the trolls. You know, I think we've been really careful with the internet because it allows people a degree of anonymity and rudeness. I mean, all you have to do is to go on any of the major newspaper websites and where they allow comments to find discussions almost inevitably being taken over by the why are you such an idiot group. And I think it's unfair to brand all atheists with that. I think Mike's stuff is actually mockery rather than I don't sense some of the hatred that comes across on the internet. It's very hard, obviously, to see emotion, but it does. It kind of makes you feel a bit ill, the level of hatred. And I think that's where I'd want to say to Mike to be extremely careful, because you're ridiculing and you're mocking, and I think you know what you're doing, and you're sort of in your own way, but I think that what you're doing could have consequences far beyond what you would want, I suspect. And that's why I'm very wary of that kind of antagonism. I have to say, by the way, Mike, it's a bit unfair on American society, after all the things I've said, just say that they're, you know, dumbed down, only interested in money and so on. After all, you were the guy who was offering $20 and put it down as just being crass, lack of common sense and stupidity not to take $20 to cross out the name God. The mighty dollar may be the idol of many, many, many Americans, but it's not the idol of all. And there are some very intelligent and reasonable Americans as well.
No, absolutely. What I do is I create content. I create videos that people will respond to. Hopefully they appreciate it. I mean, I've certainly found a niche. I know my audience. I've been doing this long enough that I know what people like, and I know it's going to be I know it's going to get them going. I know that what's going to get a response. That's what a good content creator does. Most of what my channel is I call it entertainment first, and then I also hope that it empowers people as well, especially more like in the religious videos. Now I do other videos as well, social critique, politics, and things like that. So that's also what I do. This is a full package. It's not just religion that I'm going after. So I also go after atheists. I don't know if you guys saw my recent video where I troll a bunch of famous atheists. So I'm not saying that atheists are above a little ridicule every now and then either.
Well, it's been a fascinating discussion, Mike. Thank you for coming on. And obviously, your videos have done what they aim to do, which is to get people talking about the issues and obviously disagreeing in many respects. But thank you for coming on today. And would you like to share any final thoughts before we close up today's program?
No, I just want to thank you guys for having me on the show. And, you know, I had a great time. And, you know, as far as antagonizing goes, I mean, just, you know, it will continue. The louder the opposition gets, the louder that we will get. And let's bring it on.
David, as we close, you're not, you know, you sometimes give as good as you get. You know, you're a little bit antagonistic. You're the kind. I brought you on today because I thought I think you'd interact quite sparkly with Mike. I mean, you're not against provoking people, are you?
Oh no, no. I mean, I'm not against provoking. I mean, I think my difference with Mike would be I don't think it is. I mean, I think, yes, of course, it's entertaining, and you'll always draw a bigger crowd. If I think it was Martin Lloyd-Jones, the famous preacher, who said, if you see two dogs fighting, you'll get a bigger crowd. Hmm. And you find that some Christian ministries always want to be, you know, attacking the enemy, and it seems a better fundraiser almost. But from my perspective, I want to say to Mike, yeah, he's right about Bring It On, because I tell you one thing that atheist antagonism has done is it's enabled us to proclaim the gospel to a whole lot more people. What it's done is shattered the myth that atheists are primarily reasonable, rational people, and religious people are the weak, emotive, and so on. Mike has basically just admitted that and says he produces his videos for atheists who, to be honest, don't think all that much. You'd said when we did the program that it would be, where does this antagonism get us? Well, I think ultimately, Mike is fairly comedic and so on, but ultimately, where it will get me is in prison. It will get my church banned from receiving charitable status and so on. I think it will lead to a very, very intolerant society. I think it's Peter Hitchens who says that the worst place to be an atheist is an atheist country. The best place to be an atheist is in a Christian country, because Christians do tend to be a lot more tolerant. Maybe I can just finish my saying this, that I also think where it will get us is it will get us to seeing many more people come to know Christ, because I think it's much better that these things are discussed than just brushed aside. One doesn't discuss religion or sex in polite society. Well, people like Mike are saying, stuff polite society, let's get on with it. And I say amen to that.
Okay. Well, thank you both for joining me on the program today. And if you want to find out more, as I mentioned, you can check out the links from the podcast, premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Give you a chance also to send in your comments by email, by the phone, and indeed on the Facebook and Twitter accounts. Give you those links in just a moment's time. In the meantime, my thanks to my guests, David Robertson and Mike Lee, the religious antagonist today on the programme. We've got some of your feedback and a bit more information on some of the exciting things coming up in the next week or two.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Great fun, great programme, and thanks again to my guests. And if you want to get in touch, unbelievable@premier.org.uk or phone 08456 52 52 52 and select the option to leave a voicemail for Unbelievable. And I do encourage you to follow me on Twitter, @UnbelievableJB, or indeed on Facebook. That's facebook.com/UnbelievableJB, where I post up regular items that I think will be of interest to those who follow the page and follow on Twitter. So that's the ways to get in touch. Now, I've been talking about the conference a lot, obviously, over the last few weeks. Again, just 2 weeks now before it all happens on Saturday, the 26th of May. Just to give you a little bit of an idea of what's coming up at the conference, we're going to have 9 main seminars during the day, and you'll be able to choose between which ones you go to. You can't go to them all, I'm afraid. We are recording everything on video, and we'll be making that available after the conference. So don't worry if you simply can't get there because you leave abroad or you can't make it on the day. You will be able to see the seminars, but being there in person really does make all the difference, and I encourage you to get along if you possibly can. The way to do that, premier.org.uk/reasons is where you can book in. Just £20 for a whole day's teaching, so many topics being covered. Cosmic Reasons for Christ. That's what Hugh Ross will be speaking on, how the scientific evidence points towards God creating the universe. Whose worldview Ken Samples will be asking as he presents clear reasons for the Christian worldview. John Lennox is going to be speaking on why the new atheists are missing the mark when they're gunning for God. We've got an evangelism track. Krish Kandaya and Bonnie Yule Kuhn will be looking at evangelism remixed, new models for reaching the world in the 21st century. And then we've got John Lennox and Hugh Ross teaming up to lead a seminar on evangelism in a skeptical world, how to do evangelism in a world full of so many people with intellectual objections to Christianity. And then we've got Michael Green, with a lifetime's experience in apologetic mission, teaming up with Ken Samples to lead a seminar on evangelism in a multi-faith world. How do we present the gospel in a world where there is such a plurality of religions? And finally, the confession strand of seminars. And that'll be a more light-hearted kind of look at some of the experiences of some of our guests. We'll have Ken Samples giving confessions of a compulsive thinker, Michael Green and Krish Kandaya teaming up to talk about confessions from the mission field, and finally, confessions of a former atheist, as former atheists Dan Rogers, Peter Byram, and indeed Hugh Ross team up to talk about their experiences and kind of the view from the inside, if you like. So those will be, again, very interactive, lots of Q&A, lots of that sort of stuff. On top of that, we've got an opening address from Michael Green. We've got a panel Q&A at the end of the conference. Lots of stuff that I'll be presenting as well. Do hope you can make it. premier.org.uk/reasons if you want to book yourself in for Saturday, the 26th of May. I did mention other things going on around the conference too. We've got the Monday following the conference on the 28th of May, special debate at Gunnersbury Baptist Church on whether we live on an old or a young earth. That's Hugh Ross and Ken Samples representing the old earth creationist position, opposite Andy McIntosh and Stephen Lloyd, who represent a young earth creationist position. I'll be chairing that debate. Pray for me. Not an easy debate to chair, but it should be very interesting, happening on Monday evening, the 28th of May. Posting up details with the website, with the podcast of that. If you're a student and you'd like to get along to the student debate at Imperial College on Thursday, the 24th of May in the evening, that's going on there. And Hugh Ross will be in conversation with Lewis Wolpert, who, no stranger to this program, atheist scientist, and they'll be discussing whether there's evidence for a creator of the universe. That can, if you're a member of the general public, you can apply to the Christian Union to come as a guest of the Christian Union as well. So I'll put a link to the Facebook event that they've got going for that. I'm afraid not much time for emails today. I just wanted to reflect on the findings of a survey that I've been teasing you with the last 2 weeks of the programme. We carried out a survey looking at the attitudes of the British public towards where the universe came from. Well, we were quite surprised to learn that only 26% of the British population believe that God is the cause of the universe beginning to exist. Some 41% said that they specifically don't believe that God created the universe. In addition to that, we asked a question about whether people believe there is purpose to the universe, a purpose to the universe. In that case, a greater number of people responded that they do believe there's an ultimate purpose to the universe, and a smaller number of people replied that there wasn't. So in some ways, these results are somewhat contradictory. But I put these results to some of the guests I've been having on my programme over the last few weeks. I started out by asking astrophysicists Paul Davies and Hugh Ross what their reactions were to the results of that survey of British attitudes towards the origins of the universe.
It was actually a bit ambiguous because, of course, was God asking, was God the cause of the universe? It could be interpreted to mean there is a God, but this God did not cause the universe, or it could mean there is no God, or it could mean there is no cause of the universe. So there are lots of different ways you can cut it, and that's the problem about these simple questions.
What do you think generally when you have spoken to people? Do people who don't necessarily have a physics background kind of generally assume that the universe has been around forever? Are they even aware of Big Bang cosmology, which suggests there was a point at which our universe became the universe, as it were?
Right. I think the Big Bang certainly has seeped into everybody's consciousness. And they probably think, well, it's a mystery. And that scientists say, usually when I'm pressed at dinner parties and things, they say, well, your scientists are very clever. You can explain what happened in the first second or the first microsecond or something like that. But, you know, you'll never get right back to the beginning, will you? And so they assume that somehow science will fail us and cannot come up with the ultimate explanation of things. And that, I guess, was the purpose of Lawrence's dramatic title for his book, Universe from Nothing. And so it all boils down to a discussion about what do you mean by nothing, which is what we've been discussing today.
Yes.
And over dinner parties, those discussions go on for a very long time, I'm afraid.
So, Hugh, same questions for you.
There tends to be within much of the church a strong anti-intellectual, anti-scientific veneer. And I think what you're seeing in the survey that you took in the UK is evidence that people are quite suspicious and suspect and worried about what's going to happen if they adopt a worldview that the God of the Bible is responsible for everything around it because of, quote, the baggage that comes with it, a reference to the church. And, you know, the few times I've been in Britain, what I've discovered is that people are quite favorable towards the concept of God, but they're not too happy about the church that they see in Britain. So I think worldwide there's a real responsibility on the part of those of us who call Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior to do what we can to restore the two books doctrine of the Reformation, that God gave us the book of Scripture, He gave us the book of nature, and we're compelled, according to the Bible, to be both theologians and scientists and bring the two books together and recognize that, of all people, we Christians should be the most intellectual and the most scientific. We're to worship the Lord our God with all of our mind, as well as our heart and our soul.
So just give us the sense of what those two jobs are again.
Well, number one, to demonstrate from science that there is a God that explains everything we see in the record of nature, and that that God is the God of the Bible, and that people's concepts of what the God of the Bible is like may need some adjustment based on our understanding what the Bible really says about God and also what we see in the book of nature.
And, Hugh, what's your view on the progress of science? Again, you'll apologise because this is all stuff we've gone over before, but just purely, really, for our for what we're writing up for this. I mean, do you see that science, that cosmology, as it's developed over the last number of decades, has given us more confidence in the biblical story of a God who created this universe and meant life to come into existence?
Well, a wonderful thing about the book of nature is that there's certain disciplines of science where the knowledge base is doubling every 4, 5, or 6 years. And therefore, we're getting a rich treasure chest of new evidences that we can bring to bear on the Christian faith. And what's exciting about being alive at the beginning of the 21st century is this rapid advance of the scientific enterprise is exponentially presenting us with more evidence for the handiwork of the God of the Bible.
So that was the thoughts of Hugh and Paul. I also asked our other guest of 2 weeks ago, atheist physicist Lawrence Krauss and Christian astrophysicist Rodney Holder, about their response to that survey.
Well, first of all, I think the poll shows that people can hold widely discrepant views in themselves, that people don't have to be consistent with themselves, which I think we know. I think it's fascinating I think it reflects reality. I think we pretend more people are religious than they are, and I think even many people who claim they're religious really are just seeking some kind of sense of order and meaning, but they don't believe in a God in the sense of the world's religions.
What's your response, Rodney, to these set of findings about what people believe? Are you surprised that so many came out saying that God was not the cause of the universe beginning to exist?
I think I'm agree with Lawrence that that there's a conflict between what people said to question one and question two, sort of thing. So people do hold contradictory beliefs. God was the cause of the universe beginning to exist just at 26%. You're beginning to home in on the members of the population who might have a more definite kind of belief, which would be a subset of the whole.
It's often said there's about 70% kind of ascribed to themselves a Christian. Yeah. They would write that on the census form or whatever.
They do.
Now, obviously, this comes in well below that as far as
they
people's
do.
Belief in God creating the universe.
They do. People would say they believe in science, but they don't know anything about it.
People who describe themselves as Christian do, though, because they'd like to describe themselves as good people, not because they believe in God.
Well, exactly. And I think that possibly this 26% probably fits a bit more closely with, say, something like the committed church going population of the UK. In fact, it's above that. But if you like that, that might be where that's coming from.
I don't despise those who, have a rather nebulous spiritual longing and so on. And that's what we capitalise in on Christmas and Easter when we get much larger congregations if they come to us.
Well, there you go. Just some of the responses. And don't forget, these sorts of topics are discussed quite regularly on the forums that happen on the Facebook page and at the Premier community. So look out for those links from the Unbelievable page for those pages. We're out of time for the moment. Thanks to everyone who's been in touch by email. I've got lots of emails over the last few weeks to read out, so we'll include some of those on next week's programme. In the meantime, thanks for joining me today. What's coming up next week? Let me tell you now.
You're unbelievable.
David Instone Brewer returns to have another look at his book, The Jesus Scandals. This time he'll be in conversation with James White, well known as a Christian apologist in the States, but also very much a defender of a reformed view of theology, a Calvinist view of theology. And so we'll be asking the question, was Jesus a Calvinist, on next week's show? Hear what my guest David Instone Brewer and James White have to say in response to that. That's at the same time, at the same place. Until then, have a great week.